This is Talk is Cheap. I'm your host, DJ SSD, on KPW LP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peaceworks Independent Community Radio. Continuing on with the Metro film series, I recorded at the Metro this documentary on unionizing Disney with the daughter of Roy Disney, talking about the obscene amount of money that Disney makes, but they won't unionize their employees. And so the question, the Q&A, was with the student union movement here in Eugene, featuring Will Gallahan and others on the student union movement. So that's coming up here. And then I've got some rare Alan Holdsworth. And just so what I'm doing with this show is there's basically three things. I'm mainly lectures and interviews with people that are against state-sponsored corporatism, punctuated with progressive rock, jazz, fusion tracks, rare progressive rock, jazz, fusion tracks. And I try to put a little bit of sardonic wit in there, too. So if you're not staying for the lectures, hopefully you're staying for the music. When I have, you know, a two-hour lecture, I'll play a small amount of music and split it up into two one-hour pieces. Today is just a short 20-minute Q&A, so the rest will be music. I'm going to start giving... I took out the theme song because I think that was getting a little too old, and but we're starting to pick up a lot of listeners here in Eugene. And so that's why I say I hope you'll stay for the... Hopefully you're listening for the positive solutions-based lectures and interviews that I'm doing. But if not, maybe you're going to check out the music. And so this Alan Holdsworth is from the Baked Potato in Los Angeles in 2009, kind of one of the peaks of his career. I saw him at the peak of his career in 87 with Chad Wackerman and that group. This is with another one of his great drummers is Gary Husband, and luckily with Jimmy Johnson was still alive on the bass. So just want to point out to you young whippersnappers out there, you know, this is the guitarist, okay? So, but if you listen to what the bass is doing, he's hitting a lot of what I hear people, you know, with their giant stereos hitting, but he's also riffing in between those notes. So you might want to check out what bass players can do. They can do what you like. All of us, when we're young, you know, your ears can hear the bass more. So we're all basically into the bass just as much as you are. It's just that the equipment has gotten better and our ears have deteriorated. So yeah, but also the drumming on the third song of this Alan Holdsworth trilogy with Gary Husband, what he's doing with the drums is basically amazing. I can't even explain. He's playing in 4-4 time when it was originally written in 5-4, I believe, is what's going on. So that's why his fills sound so much different. But they're still, what he's doing is just totally incredible. To fit the snare, the paradiddles into the measure is incredible. And to the point of it sounds almost like what you would hear in a techno drum machine band. But this is a live drummer. So I hope you'll stick around and check that out. It's a bit eclectic to listen to. The way to listen to jazz fusion, little hint, is you want to pick one instrument and follow that one instrument. Jimmy Johnson's bass is really fun to follow, and then you'll pick up the drums and the guitar around that. Like I say, I hope you'll come for the compelling lectures and interviews, but if not, stay for the incredible music, because you're not going to hear much of it is from my own collection, and you're not going to hear it anywhere else. Or it is, you know, what's available to let you know what's available out there to find it yourself. All right, thanks for listening. Tell your friends. KPW, LP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peaceworks, Independent Community Radio. Coming up, the student union movement at the documentary on unionizing Disney. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends. Support independent media. The movie is Abigail Disney, The American Dream and Other Fairy Tales.
But now I am very happy to introduce our panel members. In the middle, Will Garahan is a sophomore at the U of O majoring in sociology and a former U of O employee. More details on that in a minute. He is one of the founding organizers of the movement to unionize over 3,000 student workers. Carolyn Roderick is a junior at the U of O majoring in journalism and political science, and she works as a resident assistant. She is also one of the leaders of the unionization movement at the U of O, which, if successful, is believed to be one of the largest undergraduate unions at a public university in the country. And Bob Bussell is Professor Emeritus of History and the former Director of the Labor Education and Research Center at the U of O. Bob's career spans 5 decades of association with the union movement, including work with the United Farm Workers, 10 years as an organizer with the Amalgamated Clothing and Textile Workers Union, and 27 years as a university-based labor educator. Thank you all for being here. So we're going to share the microphone, pass it back and forth. I'd like to get started. Carolyn, could you just give us a short update on where things stand with the unionization at U of O?
Yeah, so as of Friday, we filed all 2,100 plus of our cards to become certified as a union. And so it's a really amazing feeling to be on the other side of that. You know, the campaign was 6 months of effort, and I had been there for about 5 months of it. And, you know, we faced a lot of different barriers, whether it was getting into different workplaces, being intimidated, and even having Will fired, which I'm sure is a more interesting story, so I will pass him the mic.
Yeah, I guess it's been an incredible journey. I was fired in February for eating food without paying for it. As a student dining hall worker, they don't get free shift meals. The shifts they work, we throw out tons of like edible food every night. Almost a third of students on campus at the University of Oregon face some sort of food insecurity issues. So, it's very common for students and student workers to be taking food from dining halls without paying for it. They just decided that I'm one of a very prominent open union organizer who had appeared in national news the day before talking about our organizing. Someone who had been working, we were at like 90% of our workplace, which had like around 75 people, had signed a union card at that point. They decided that it was time to enforce the rules against me. So I lost my job. And here we are. One day, I think that as the Starbucks workers have been saying, one day longer, one day stronger.
And first, I just want to really salute Will and Carolyn and everybody else that's working with them for standing up, for being a response to the story that's being told here about inequality and injustice and power. And I would just add, this is happening all over the country. Just right now, one of my degrees is from Rutgers University, and my alma mater's kicking some butt with a strike right now. And there was, a strike of 44,000 people at the UC system in California, and wages aren't the only issue that are out there, but they are in a lot of places because of the things that we're seeing up here. So I just wanted to add that as a contextual comment. LERC, the Labor Education and Research Center, LERC as we affectionately call it, has been around since 1978. There's about 30 or so of these programs, mostly at public universities across the country. And just as there's programs like Cooperative Extension, there are programs for agriculture, forestry, business, when the union movement, particularly when it was stronger or strong enough to demand these types of programs as something that workers should get resources and services from the university and unions that represent workers, these programs were founded first in the Northeast and the Midwest and then later on the West Coast. And so what LIRC does, it provides teaching, research, leadership development, technical assistance, all kinds of services really to help people who are union members and other workers to be more effective and more powerful in their jobs. And the other side of that is not only the workplace, but to help people to be, in the broadest sense, effective citizens. Because it's not only what happens at the workplace, it's what happens in the world at large. A lot of the challenges that workers face have to be addressed not only at bargaining tables, but in the political realm. And LIRC helps prepare people to be more effective in exercising their role, both in the workplace and in civic affairs. So that's the elevator speech.
I worked there for 20 years, real briefly, and I wouldn't remember unions. I would never made it. The film is excellent. I have a Disney pension. It really wasn't, this pretty much is true. Ended up making $18 an hour, but it took 20 years to get there. I started off at 6. The unions were a lot of help. Without them, I don't think we would have gotten anything in terms of fair kind of stuff. I just thought I'd throw that in there, but, did 20 years there, 2001, 2021. Wow. So, but I made it. Yeah. I worked Magic Kingdom primarily.
And this book said that there was these new kinds of markets that allowed a few people to make huge amounts of money. But the book didn't say why these new markets came to being. I think this film would say that the reason is greed, weaker labor movement, and changing government policies. The thing is, I was thinking about this basketball game I saw on TV yesterday. And the thing is, years ago, these very skilled athletes didn't make as much money comparatively. And so I don't think there was the money available to pay them, first of all. And I'm just wondering if people had an idea about why these people can get away with making all this money, not just CEOs, but athletes, and I'm not sure who else can do this.
Well, I'll just say a few things briefly, Milton. I think the film talks a lot about that. I mean, one thing is the weakening of the labor movement. That's been pretty critical as far as workers not having a voice. And, when people bargain collectively, both data and experience show that they do better. And we had when 30%+ of the labor force was unionized in the 1950s and for a while beyond, a lot of workplaces had to do better to keep the union out, frankly. So unions had power even beyond their own ranks. Certainly it's been government policy, it's been neoliberalism, it's been tax policy, it's been policies that help capital flight, whether domestically or with globalization. And the one thing that's kind of embedded a little bit in the film, but I think we have to look at, is financialization. The rise of private equity, hedge funds, these enormous pools of capital that in many ways are unaccountable, that aren't taxed in the ways that income is, typically or should be taxed. And so really, we've had pretty much free market policies, as the film says, run amok, and it's allowed a lot of this to happen. I just want to quickly say, you have mentioned sports. There's an interesting development in sports that some of you may be familiar with that's relevant here. Do you know that minor league baseball players, now have a union? Collective bargaining. And their conditions were awful. If you were ever to talk to anybody who worked with the Eugene Emeralds, our own team, this was a major, major event. And Major League Baseball actually did it with a lot of pressure, but they did it voluntarily. People tend to think that athletes have it made. And even in the professional athlete world, almost all those athletes have labor organizations to represent them. LeBron James was an officer in his union, for God's sake. You wouldn't think, LeBron, it's it's really important for workers to have a collective voice. I mean, just in, I think in almost every realm and setting. Just one last thing I want to point out real quick, though, the term cast members. I just wanted to say something about that. Does anybody know there really aren't any workers or employees in America anymore? Because everybody's either a cast member. What do they call y'all?
So for RA specifically, and I know this, they do this in orientation too. Yes, I'm a resident assistant, so that's what an RA is. But, you know, they call us student leaders, and for years we believed we couldn't unionize because we were not technically employees. And I do think we still fall in some gray area, but we fit every legal definition of employee, and that's, you know, been a huge way of holding us back. And I think also going off the sports point, a lot of the workers in our athletics department at U of O are unpaid. They are interns, where an internship is meant to help you build skills and things. I know people doing laundry that are interns, and I know people scheduling events that are interns. And it's a lot of us just really trying to fight for a better future and, you know, a university system and a corporation system that sort of is built off the exploitation. You know, our sports department at U of O is huge, and it's built off the labor of unpaid interns and unpaid students.
If I could just interject and back up just for a second to give a little context to the audience, maybe. Will, could you tell us the reasons behind the effort to unionize the students? What drove it, and what are you hoping to accomplish?
I mean, like I said, 30% of students on campus face some sort of food insecurity. The starting wage for a dining worker in one of our dining halls is minimum wage. We don't get free shift meals every day we work. There are all these different, like, you know, real basic things which you feel like workers deserve, which we haven't been getting. I mean, Carolyn has had to deal with the most horrible situations I've heard about on campus, and is getting paid $100 a month for her hard emotional labor. Across campus, workers are, you know, having different issues. One thing that unites us all is that we're all paid on a monthly pay period. And as college students with, you know, not very much money in our bank accounts, it's hard to budget for getting a paycheck once a month. So a big thing everyone wants is a 2-week pay period. Higher wages overall are, you know, some jobs are paid better, like the tour guides on campus. But then, you know, the ones that suspiciously have the most students working them, the dining hall jobs, are paid the least amount of money. So, you know, they're just kind of years of neglect and feeling like that we are being, you know, taken advantage of and exploited on campus by the very administration that, you know, we're paying for our education. And we were fed up, and so we decided to unionize.
Yeah, I just think there's just a real basic principle here. We're a culture, right, that venerates work. I mean, work is important, right? But when work is not rewarded, you know, that's really a very telling statement. And we see it in so many realms and places that people are working and, again, are one paycheck away from some level of catastrophe or disaster. And, you know, it's a story writ large.
So I'm classified staff at U of O. And I haven't really been terribly active with SEIU 503. But what is it that I should be doing, for example, that would be useful for y'all in terms of solidarity or what have you?
Great question. So right now, we just submitted cards. So in Oregon, as public employees, there's a couple different ways we can get certified as a union. Both of them kind of involve getting a show of support from our coworkers and from everyone in the workplace. And so our initial way is card check, which is if we get over half the student workers on campus to sign a union card, we'll get our union. And so we just submitted our cards, and we have up to 45 days. We're going to see whether or not that's enough to have over 50%. If that's not the case, we're going to have another 45 days, and then there's going to be a union election, which since we know we definitely have over 30% of the student workers have signed a card, there's definitely not 6,000 student workers on campus that we know of. So after that, we're going to have an election. And at that point, if it comes to that, we're going to have probably like public rallies, start to show support, bring people out, get people involved to kind of make a final push. If we do win the union versus card check, I think right now our sights are set on next fall as when we're going to start bargaining our contract. And so I think that would be the time that we would love, I'm sure, people to come out to events, to come out rallies. But I mean, other than that, you kind of caught us at this interesting waiting moment.
I would say a big thing that made at least organizing in my workplace successful is knowing people's names, who they are. You know, I think, you know, as unions, as campus unions, I think because we're different unions, it's very easy to feel like it's us and then it's this union and then it's this union. We all work under the same conditions. You know, we have a close relationship with our grad student union where our working conditions are their teaching conditions, and the conditions I are in are the conditions that you all work in the dining halls in. So just building that sense of community and getting to know each other has been an incredibly powerful tool while organizing.
I think that's just amazing what you have done, all of you together, and how much compassion you have and how you work together. And in the film, the couples, the love came through no matter what. And I think that we need so much love in this, not money, but you know, it's great. Let's all have a roof over our head. Let's have food. Let's have education. And let's love one another. And you guys are just exemplary. Thank you so much.
I think the thing I'd say is talk to your coworkers about your job. You know, what you like about your job, but what also you want to get changed about your job. And talk to them about how they feel about the job. And that really is the biggest part of, you know, unionization for me, is that so often in the jobs I'd worked previously, there was really a disconnect between me and my coworkers. I wasn't seeing them like a family, like, you know, one of the workers in the movie talks about. And you can really build those kinds of bonds with your coworkers at work. And that is how, you know, unions succeed and are strong.
I have a really quick question. I'd like to hear from all of you, but if you can't, that's fine. So I know you've been mostly talking about people who are on campus and connected on campus. I have a lot of friends. I've graduated like about over a decade ago, but I still know a lot of people who are on campus. So specifically for people who are not employees or students or anything, I think there are a lot of people who want to get involved and want to contribute. And the thing that we're usually told is to, oh, follow on Instagram, follow on Facebook, share stuff. But I think there are a lot of people who have already set into the careers. For example, I do marketing. So I want to know if there are any concrete needs that you all would want to put out there with, you know, creating graphics, or if somebody else is into tech, helping with a website. I was just wondering if there's anybody out here, or anybody out here knows people who aren't directly connected to campus, how can we get involved in a really concrete way to help the cause more than just sharing something?
Yeah, thank you. That's a really great question. I would say the biggest thing right now we need during the process of certifying our union is money. We have a GoFundMe that I would like to plug. We have a relief and solidarity fund, and that is a really big deal. You know, I think one of the barriers in the labor movement is how expensive some of these processes are. To file our unfair labor practice, when Will was fired, it was $300, which many students do not have out of pocket. You know, so I would say donating to our GoFundMe would be a really helpful thing. Lawyers are expensive. The certification process is expensive. Filing unfair labor practices and holding the university accountable for these things, it takes money, unfortunately. So I think donations are what would be a really, really helpful way to help us out.
The GoFundMe is linked on our social media pages, which are all under UO Student Workers. It's also, if you just Google UO Student Workers GoFundMe, should be there. You try adding, you know, Solidarity and Relief Fund. I think as for, like, you know, if you want to get involved, right now we are, you know, very, very young. This kind of union's been around for 6 months. In the future, I would love to see, like, you know, a solidarity corps of people who might not be, you know, students or workers on campus, or but want to help support the workers on campus. I know in the past we've had, I think it was called SLAP, the Student Labor Action Project, was an organization on campus. I think it'd be great to bring that back, and other ways for, you know, non-workers, students, and community members to get involved with the union work, because there is so much work that needs to be done. Right now, we are luckily in a good spot with lawyers because we have great relationships with our other, you know, campus unions.
You know, I look at you as students, and you represent the foundation of the future. I don't know why the administration just doesn't say, okay, this is common sense. Let's pay you more. Let's divvy out the food that's being thrown away, because you should be concentrating on your studies. And, you know, you have so much to look forward to, and it's such a challenge anyway for what my generation left you with to try to clean up. And I wish you the best of luck. I was really lucky. I work for IBM. I raised two sons by myself. My son lives in San Francisco. He and his wife will not have any kids because his rent for a two-bedroom apartment is $3,900 a month. And how are you going to get a house? What happens in a year when you graduate? And I just, you know, I just don't understand why the administration doesn't say, you know, you represent the future. We need to help you. So thank you.
Thank you for that. Yeah, for sure. I think a big thing is realizing that this is not just a problem at University of Oregon. This is not the administration of University of Oregon, just like it isn't the executive at Disneyland. This is a problem across the U.S. You know, it's not only University of Oregon students that won't be able to afford the cost of living as it increases. And I think the other important thing to note about this is, while these problems are nationwide, this movement is nationwide. You know, I started organizing the RAs because I saw that RAs at Bernard College in New York had started organizing. So I think while it's a really difficult moment in history, it's an incredibly critical one. And this student movement is, I hope that this is something we can leave behind, and this is sort of the legacy for our generation, is this, you know, using this moment and creating a more equitable society where money is divided equally and where everyone can have their basic needs met, and having sort of a reignition of the labor movement. That's really what we're looking for on a larger scale, and especially like as a nationwide movement across universities.
Yeah, I just want to expand. As you know, as Carolyn said, it's a nationwide movement. It's, you know, the tale of austerity to our public resources and public goods. The University of Oregon is a public university, despite being, you know, 9% funded by the government and 91% funded by private, I guess, investments by donors. there is a very explicit goal amongst our administration to act like a private company to cut down costs. When the previous president, Michael Schill, was appointed, Phil Knight gave an interview where he pretty much said, I love where Schill is taking this university. It's going, you know, it's becoming more private, and that's good. And that is kind of sickening to me. As someone who's seen firsthand how, you know, administrators trying to cut down on costs, trying to work our, you know, my coworkers longer, work us harder, it's exactly the opposite of what we want, which is to be paid more, to have to work less hours to be able to pay our rent, and to not be overworked at work so we can actually enjoy our jobs.
Two quick points. Lurk was a piece of this story as well. Our budget was, without any notice, cut in half 4 years ago. I could go on about that. I won't. But just to say, it's part of this larger story in terms of the public commitment of the university, the public programs like the museum, like the Bach Festival. Those places were all cut. Lurk was cut even much more than all of those. The other thing I think is we've got to get to the idea that high wages, decent wages, are not a bad thing. Right? It's so interesting. It's like, oh, you're earning too much. Just to think about this, and it's interesting because Bernie Sanders, you got to give Bernie a lot of credit for taking the idea of a $15 minimum wage. People thought he was whack when he was talking about this at first, right? Now everybody's saying it, and 15 isn't enough. And then the service employees union, to their credit, aided the fight for 15 for fast food workers and the Burgerville workers and a lot of other places. So suddenly the idea that, you know, and now you've got SEIU that represents childcare workers. They're looking for $20 an hour. So I think we're starting to create a social environment in which high wages are not a bad thing. They're a good thing. Because the old idea going back to the New Deal era was that the more people earned, the more they spent. And you create a virtuous cycle and an economy that works for everybody. So that's, I think, the social mentality that we need to return to.
So the Federal Reserve, you know, they're notorious for crashing the economy. What is the movement, is the union movement nationwide going to survive or what needs to be done to make sure it survives the, you know, rate hikes and anything on inflation, too, general?
I mean, I have no clue, but I'm going to still be here, and I'm going to keep fighting. We're entering the second Gilded Age, and things aren't looking that great for the American workforce. But I think, and this would be my one thing to say about what I wish this movie covered more, was, you know, how we got out of the first Gilded Age and the Great Depression, which was the countless radical organizers who were organizing the unhoused, the jobless people out on the streets, and created this radical labor movement. Thank you. Congress of Industrial Organizations. Yes. The CIO was formed largely by, not explicitly communist, but there were many,
often enough
communists who were these incredible organizers who were workers themselves, who were able to fight for such an incredible movement that, you know, led to the New Deal and to the only four-term presidency in American history. And conversely, then, what killed us was the second Red Scare and the purging of all those radicals who were willing to ask for more from their, from their bosses and weren't working in collaborating with their bosses to keep wages down. And I see, for me, no matter what the Fed does, I'm going to stay here in the labor movement. And I'm going to keep organizing because that's what, you know, they did. And, you know, my inspiration are all those organizers that pulled us out of the Great Depression. And, you know, Jerome Powell wants to create a second Great Depression. So, you know, American workers are paid even less than they currently are. I say, all right, go ahead. I can't control what he does. I can control what I do.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a piece of, I guess, common wisdom that, you know, at our lower points and at the heart, at one of the hardest points that we're at, we have the greatest ability to make change. And I think that's what this is about. And I think, you know, that's why this labor movement is happening now. You know, if they send us into a larger depression, then we'll keep organizing even stronger. You know, and I think it's using the opportunity that we have and the ability to just keep going no matter what and to keep making change. So like Will said, like, no matter what happens, I will still be here. I will still be organizing. So will he.
This is KEPW LP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peace Works Independent Community Radio. You've been listening to the student union Q&A at the Metro presentation of the movie about unionizing Disney. And now, some really incredible Alan Holdsworth that I hope you will listen to and ask a musician what it is these guys are doing instead of just buying corporate music that everyone likes. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends to support independent media. Thank you.
Jimmy Johnson on the bass. Gary Husband on the drum. That was a tune called Leave Them On, and this one's called Fred. Thank you.
Thank you. Gary Husband on the drums. That was